And we're back, everyone. This is Franco Premier League Show. We're finally back. It's been a month.
Sorry, I've had a really busy couple of weeks.
No, it's all good, man. We have a lot to cover today. A lot has happened. That's usually like the recurring theme. Because we keep like halting. بس هنتكلم على كذا حاجة النهاردة. بس first of all, commiserations, fam, on yesterday. I'm not taking the piss, okay? I'm literally offering you my commiseration.
I mean, the signs were there.
We'll talk about it in extent lately, but Martin, let me ask you a quick question before we get started. Who's going to win the league?
City.
I unfortunately agree, believe it or not. I hate that I have to admit this, but it looks like it. طب let's get started. يعني طبعا we skip like about 3 game weeks or so. آخر مرة تكلمنا فيها Wolves had only scored 2 goals, one of which was an own goal. To be honest, we predicted it. We said once they find their shooting boost, they're gonna get firing. And what a reply.
They've been doing well, yeah. They've been quite solid defensively as well, which is what we know of Wolves. With the new manager, they were a bit more more risks.
I wouldn't say. I kind of disagree. I'm sorry. I don't think they're really that solid defensively. Then they only had one clean sheet in the last 5 games.
I know, yeah, clean sheets, I guess, is a measurement of, or like a testament to being solid defensively, but I feel like there is more to it than clean sheets. I feel like
they've
improved defensively in general.
They're not leaking as much goals as before, and they used to concede 2 or 3 a game.
They just look a bit more assured at the back, I guess. But yeah, it's not obviously as solid as they were with Nuno Santo. They were a lot more of a defensive team. They were tough to break down. But obviously, they've improved offensively. Raúl Jiménez seems to be finding some form. Huang Hee-chan seems to be scoring the goals. But they're finding the
five goals
now,
in 4 games. Or the four goals in 5 games.
Something like that, yeah. That's it. I mean, they're finding their feet slowly but surely. Which is good, honestly. I'm happy for them, to be honest, because they are a good team to watch. They're not as boring as they used to be. So I'm glad that that's being rewarded with points and with goals and with good position in the league.
Honestly, the writing was on the wall, and we both said it last episode. They play well. It's not like they're playing bad. They just weren't getting the results, and they're finally getting the results now. So let's talk about their ex-manager and his team right now. What happened? Because they had a solid start, but I think they only got 2 wins since they got 2 wins in the last 6 games. In the league,
yeah.
In the Conference League, they're losing. How? How do you lose to Chelsea's affiliate club?
I mean, it happens. I mean, I don't think they care about the Conference League. I don't think anyone cares about the Conference League.
I disagree.
Disagree about them caring?
I see them because they only won two League Cups in the last 30 years. Spurs fans won any trophy. Like, even that League Cup, like, they were trying their best to win that against City. I kind of dislike, I think they care, but I just think they're bad.
Oh, I do agree that they have been poor recently. But at the same time, I guess the Conference League is a good chance for rotation, a good chance for some French players to get some minutes. And it's on Thursdays, so it's tough to maintain the same starting 11 or put out your strongest 11 to play for the Conference League, especially in the group stages. If they get knocked out of the group stages, obviously it would be a big surprise for everyone. I don't think they will, necessarily. It depends on who you ask, I guess. I guess some Spurs fans, I'm sure, maybe a lot of Spurs fans would be willing to go all in for the Conference League. And I wouldn't blame them, obviously. As you said, they need a trophy. They haven't had a trophy in a very long time. If I was a Spurs fan, I wouldn't be satisfied with the Conference League as a trophy, to be honest. I would be more satisfied with the League Cup. Because I feel like Conference League is not really a trophy, to be honest. It's just kind of something like a stopgap in the middle while they rework the Champions League and the Europa League. I don't know, man.
It could get them to the Europa League, though. Like, in the league, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. It could get them to the Europa League next season, winning the Conference League.
I guess it's too early to tell what's going to happen in the league, but I mean, it depends on their ambitions, really. I don't know what they're hoping for. I don't know what the objectives are for this season. I'm sure Nuno Santo would be happy with the Conference League because it would still be a trophy under his name for a club that hasn't won a trophy in a long time. And even if they have a poor season domestically, if they end it with the Conference League, I think the board would be happy with it.
I think the board will take anything at this point.
I guess, yeah, but you never know. It depends, I guess. The beginning of the especially these kind of competitions, the Europa League and the Conference League, you're always going to have to depend on a lot of younger players, a lot of out-of-favor players. And when you get a bit deeper into it, sometimes you start to take it more seriously. And obviously, depending on how you're doing domestically and how you're doing in the other competitions. But for Spurs, I don't think they'll be challenging for the league. For being honest, I don't think they'll be challenging for top four this season. I feel like if their French players get them to like the round of 16, let's say, maybe they start taking a bit more seriously and start going for the trophy. As of this point, I don't see it changing that they're kind of rotating and putting out weaker starting 11s for the Conference League games.
Yeah, I mean, and rightfully so. I mean, it's a bit of a bullshit trophy. Let's just face it. I'm just talking about Spurs themselves. I think they're so deprived to the point that they would take anything at this point. I do see your point, but I still think that they actually care about it. It's not like they're just darbin hatamash. But Sana, honestly, they're horrible. I don't say that lightly. They're so bad to watch. They get pushed around every game. They don't offer that much attacking output. Harry Kane looks abysmal. And I know, here's the thing. Like, I know every episode we do like this, the team does the opposite.
I mean, they looked like they were kind of rediscovering their form. After the Arsenal game, they got two wins against Villa and Newcastle.
And they were put in a spliff against Arsenal, though. Like, we didn't talk about that game because we didn't record. But That game was horrible, man. This was just as bad as you lot's loss last night.
Maybe not that much, but yeah, it was a quite a comfortable win for Arsenal. And I feel like
3-0 in the first 20 minutes.
More the element of surprise, I guess, with Arsenal coming out of a very tough few games. And I feel a lot of people were kind of writing them off. But they had a very, very rough start the season, fixture-wise.
Arsenal,
And I was kind of like, not confident, but I felt that they were gonna bounce back from it when they start going on a roll a bit. They need a couple of wins, maybe not even convincing wins, but they had their first win against Norwich wasn't a very convincing win, but they just went on from there. A bit of a trip up against Palace with the draw. They could have easily lost. But they're playing much better, Arsenal, I'm talking about. Going back to Spurs, I think after the Arsenal game, they went back, they beat Villa, they beat Newcastle, as I said. And then the Conference League loss against Vitesse, and then the West Ham game yesterday. Yeah, West Ham game was a close game. I feel like they weren't good, but they definitely could have held on to a draw, which would have been an okay result, I guess, away to West Ham. It's not a bad result. But set piece, and they concede. It's lack of awareness, I guess, or just a lapse in concentration. And it's been happening quite often with Spurs, especially defensively. They're getting these lapses of concentration when they just gift the opponent's goals for some reason. And it's weird coming from an Nuno Santo team, because I know that he focuses a lot on the defensive side and being organized defensively, being compact and everything. So I don't know, maybe the players are just not up for it. Maybe the squad is lacking. He has a couple of holes in his squad. I'd say Emerson has been okay, but defensively he's looked suspect. Sanchez or Dyer or whoever's playing next to Romero, they have a mistake or two in them. Romero has been quite solid. Reguilón is usually quite solid, but Sabardo, every now and then, he makes defensive mistakes. So defensively, they don't look very confident, I guess, or they don't look solid. They don't look like a Nuno Santo team should look like.
They don't look like they're offering much on the ball. Like they look lost with the ball at their feet.
I feel like that's kind of been a problem with Nuno Santo in general as a manager, that he focuses a lot on defensive side, and then offensively it's more individual. At Wolves it was kind of similar. It was more of a Damatori or Jimenez mix of let's try to make something out of nothing. Obviously, when you have Adama Traore, he's always going to be able to carry the ball a very long distance. It kind of got them out of that situation a lot. In Spurs, they don't have the same kind of player. They obviously have quality players in Son and Kane and Lucas Moura and Ndombele and all these guys. But at some point, when you're playing with two CDMs like Skip and Højbjerg, or not necessarily the best at carrying the ball from deep, they're more defensive oriented. You're gonna have some problems with build up, especially if you're getting pressed, especially if you're playing away and you're not seeing much of the ball. You're gonna have problems. You're gonna have missed passes. You're gonna have panic clearances.
Let me ask you though. Why was it working at Wolves, and why it's shit at Tottenham? even though Tottenham has more attacking players, they could offer more attacking output.
As I said before about Nuno Santo, I feel like he's not someone who coaches build-up. He's not someone who coaches what you're supposed to do when you have the ball. He's someone who coaches what you're supposed to do off the ball more than anything, and that's his main focus on his teams. So when Spurs have possession, it starts to be more individual, which is kind of similar to how United are at the moment. It starts to be more, I'm going to take the ball, I'm going to pass, and that's my part done. There's no movement of the ball, especially from the midfield. There's no pass and then like or triangle passes or triangle plays or anything that you feel like has been worked on previously. It's more, let's see who's open. I'll make the pass, and then that's the problem from there. And that kind of stagnation comes with a lot of managers. Usually when the players are not convinced with the way they're playing, that's usually a signal of that they're not happy with how they're being deployed or how the team's playing or how defensive they have to be. I've usually seen that's kind of a sign for it, and I feel like that happened with Solskjaer at United, happening at Spurs, and it happened in a lot of teams throughout the year.
That's what I want to ask you, though. I want to ask you two questions, and then we can close this segment on Tottenham. First of all, Nuno Santos' like style, typically not that dissimilar to Mourinho, right? So there's not like a huge transition there. And second question I want to ask you is there a specific player at Tottenham that could be like, oh, pointed at a hole with that? Because everyone is playing like shit, I know that. But who's the worst at that Nuno Santos system?
I think answering your first question, the problem with Mourinho at Spurs is that they were good in periods and then they were bad in longer periods. And Spurs, as we said before, they started the season really well, beating City. They looked very promising. They looked sharp.
Because, very, like, you know, with every with every manager, there's like this honeymoon phase. It was very short lived for Nuno.
It was, yes.
And it looks like that the players don't even want to be there.
No problem. I feel like the problem with Nuno Santo is, yes, obviously, there is usually, or more often than not, there is a honeymoon phase when the players are excited for the new manager. They want to prove themselves. They want to prove that they have a place in the starting 11. That usually happens. But at the same time, when results don't come, even when performances are there, because I feel like Spurs got the results and they were performing quite well at the beginning of the season. And then the performances started to fade away a bit. And then they started to kind of be okay, but to not get the results. I feel like even against Chelsea, even though the game ended 3-0, the first half, Spurs were actually quite good. But obviously at the end, they lost quite convincingly against Palace. They weren't very good until even before the red card, and then they just conceded 3. And obviously it looks really bad, but it was a closer game than the scoreline would suggest. And then when these games keep happening, you kind of lose confidence that you start getting too far away from the top of the table, and then you feel like there were hopes that we're going to challenge for top four, that we're going to be challenging the likes of United, Liverpool, maybe even Chelsea and City with a new manager, with the new additions, with keeping Harry Kane. But so then the objectives start to change. Now we're looking at maybe chance for top six, chance for Europa League. Let's start try going for the cup again. Let's try winning a trophy. It's kind of demoralizing, I guess, when that change happens.
I think the biggest thing for them was losing the North London derby. That could have been the worst. That could have been the worst thing that happened to them. Now they lost four derbies in a row. I think that's a record. I'm not sure. I think they lost four London derbies in a row. I need to double check. That's a record. Yeah.
It was a big hit, morale wise and confidence wise. But they were poor, before then. That was kind of the icing on the cake, I guess, in a bad way. But they were poor a few weeks before then, and then losing to Arsenal quite comfortably as well. Obviously, doesn't do them any favors. With the one player, the question about the one player, I feel like the one player that's kind of letting the team down at the moment is probably Harry Kane. I feel like the team in general is working quite hard. Son and Lucas Moura, you can tell that they're putting everything out there. Even on them, and Ndombele is not known really for being a hard worker. I feel like he's been working hard, trying to track back, playing at the top of a midfield three with two CDMs behind them.
Has obviously, I think the Ndombele has been the best player under Nohima and Son probably.
Yeah, I think he's been quite good. Harry Kane, for some reason, he's been very frustrating, I guess, this season.
Frustrating is an understatement.
I don't know if it's something, if it's just finding form. I don't know if it's something behind the scenes about his contract and wanting to leave and something that's happening with the board. I don't know what's happening exactly.
I think his fire is gone, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. But this current moment for this season, I feel like he's been quite disappointing, and he hasn't really been doing much, whether pressing or scoring the goals or getting the assist or build up or anything. He's been very lazy. And he scored, I think, his first goal recently. I think it was last game.
Yeah.
Not yesterday, the game before. Aston Villa, I believe. And he got an assist as well, if I remember correctly. Had quite a good game. So I was expecting him to kind of go on from there. But then against West Ham, he was non-existent again. I don't know. If he finds form, I feel like it will make a huge difference for Spurs, because an in-form Harry Kane is a very scary striker to come against. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, let's move on from the North London shit house, and talk. Was initially this was a question: is Salah the best player in the world? When I was writing the script. I don't think it's a question now, is it?
I think he is. Currently, he is the best player in the world.
Yeah.
There are people arguing that he should be given the Ballon d'Or.
I don't think so. I don't agree.
I disagree with that personally.
There's three people above him in my mind.
I think it should be Lewandowski.
Me too.
I feel like with a lot of these contests, it's usually a mix of popularity and recency bias. For popularity, Salah is quite a popular player. A lot of people.
I don't think he'll win it though, would he?
I don't think he'll win it either. But yeah. I feel like he'd be close.
He'd be close, definitely. Like, here's the thing. Had it been right after January, Mesalan, and he won anything with Egypt in the AFCON or had like really solid performances there, then I would say, yeah, definitely him. But it's in November, right? And the voting closed in October. Looking back on it now, okay, in the last year, Salah won nothing in terms of team-wise. And individuality wise, he lost the golden boot to Harry Kane. I'm not trying, of course, undermine him, like we agreed upon. He's the best player in the world right now. There's no question about it. He's not the candidate for the Ballon d'Or, though. I can think of four names that deserve it before him.
I think he hasn't been a worthy Ballon d'Or winner, but obviously if he keeps his form, he can definitely be in the conversation for next year. I feel like mid-August or September until now, he's been the best player in the world. Best if we're before then, for the first 8 months of the year, or 6 months, or whatever, 7 months, I feel like he hasn't really been in that level. I think there would be tough arguing against him being the best player in the world right now.
Oh yeah, for sure. But there, no one comes close, I think.
I mean, Benzema's been really good recently.
He's been really good, but like form to form, I think
Salah. Obviously Salah, I think.
He's not even close.
The best player in the world right now.
Yeah.
We'll see how the season goes, I guess.
You said top. Give me your top three. Ballon d'Or.
My predicted top three or my personal top three?
Both.
Okay.
Mine is only one set.
If I was the one responsible for it, I would give it to Lewandowski. I would put Benzema after, and I would put Salah third.
I can't not put a Champions League winner there in the top three. But which one is what I'm struggling with? Of course, top one for me is Lewandowski. I think it was a disgrace. He missed out on it last season. He's been due one. The guy scored, I think, 50 goals in a calendar year, which is like ridiculous. It's like Ronaldo and Messi numbers. Actually, it was 70 in a calendar year, Kamel. So it is Lewandowski.
He scored 50 this year, like at this point.
Yeah, probably. But I'll give it first place. I'll give it Lewandowski. Second place, I'll give it to Messi. Bit controversial, I know, but I think winning the Copa America is a pretty big deal. Third, I'll say Conte. I think Conte deserves a shout. I mean, yeah, he was the main reason for that Champions League run. And it's one thing getting three Man of the Match awards in a row in two semifinals and one final. That alone is pretty hard. Doing it as a central defense or central midfielder is unheard of. I can't not give him a mention. So maybe that's a bias. Yeah, sure.
I think everyone agrees on the quality that Conte has. But the problem is, and the problem with picking someone from the Chelsea team in general is that there were some players who were always there. Like Rudiger, Jorginho.
Yes.
I guess Kovacic to an extent. Kovacic and Conte. Mount. I feel like
it was a unit performance. Yes,
a core to the squad, but it's very difficult to pick just one player that kind of had consistently a really good year. Because I feel like with the rotation as well, and with how Tuchel's been playing, I feel like what got Chelsea the Champions League is how good they were collectively, defensively, and pressing and
hard work too.
Yeah, obviously a lot of hard work. You can argue Kovacic deserves it. You can argue Jorginho deserves it. You can argue Mount deserves it.
You see my point, though. I think it's these three individual performances put him off for me. Those two Real Madrid games, especially. He was the reason why we won.
He was. He was the best player in both games, deservedly. And in the final, did he play in the final?
He was the man of the match.
Really? So who didn't
yeah.
play? Kovacic?
No, he played with Jorginho.
So
I think I sent you the heat map. It was ridiculous. It was like the whole pitch.
Yeah, but I guess, yeah, obviously Conte is, I think he is the best in his position still to this point in the world. But so like I'm saying, it's difficult to put him up for an individual award, especially the Ballon d'Or, with the competition around him. I'd say he'd be...
And also combine that with how he performed at the Euros, yes, it doesn't really count towards his argument.
I mean, obviously, if you're looking at it from a trophy point of view, you had Jorginho won the Champions League, you won the Euros. And
Super
that's
Cup.
A lot of people look at as a measurement. I don't personally like looking at that kind of stuff because it's been ignored a lot in the past 10-15 years with Messi and Ronaldo, obviously, and there are a lot of other players who are deservedly should have won the Ballon d'Or and got the trophies to back it up and never got it. So
Schneider, Robin,
Schneider, Iniesta, Ribery, a lot of players. But at the same time, obviously, winning trophies gives you a good argument. But it's very difficult to pick someone from that Chelsea team, if I'm being honest. For top three, obviously, they're going to have a lot of players in the top 10, 15.
They just announced, yeah, the top 30. And Mason Mount was in there first. I mean, honestly, him and Foden. So it like shows it's a pretty big achievement. Like at their young age, to be nominated for the Ballon d'Or, it's pretty huge.
And Mount has been really good last season, especially after Tuchel came.
He was the best player under Lampard, and he became even better under Tuchel. Dub, Nigi, little segment. A bit lengthy. What's going on at Man United? What happened? I mean, the حلقة لوحدها, of course.
I'm gonna try to be as straightforward as possible.
We've been here before last year.
Yeah,
we had the same exact conversation after Bashak Shahir.
We did, yeah, and I'm sure we've had it other times after Leipzig as well. It's happened a few times. We've been in this situation before with Solskjaer. The thing is, I'm never gonna be, or I'm not someone who's gonna be like the manager needs to go. I'm usually someone who likes to back our manager, regardless of how bad or how good it is. Because I don't like calling for managers to be fired, to be honest. I feel like it's useless because ultimately I'm not the one deciding. And at the same time...
Abramovich disagrees. And Watford disagrees.
I'm not going to say that Ollie, old Solskjaer, hasn't been making a lot of mistakes recently. With his team selections, with his tactics, with his just way of playing. But at the same time, I'm a firm believer in the fact that the players have a big part to play regardless of who the manager is. And I think the players have been letting the team down a lot recently, and there's been a lot of individual mistakes. And just kind of, yeah, any school level errors that have been happening, and some of them fall down on Solskjaer for how he has the team playing, and some of them just has to fall on the players themselves. With Solskjaer, the problem is the team doesn't really have an identity. The team doesn't really have a way of playing. There is nothing really, like I've talked already about with Spurs, there is nothing really that you feel like is being worked on, defensively and offensively.
But that's the thing, like, a lot of managers out there don't have a specific way of being tactically set up. Yani Simeone, Koeman, Pochettino, even Sir Alex Ferguson. There's no like the one distinct way of playing. This is not necessarily the worst thing about Ole.
It's not the worst thing, but even with these managers, they don't have, like, yes, Guardiola invented something that no one else did. Klopp, I guess, didn't invent something, but his technique and his way is very, very clear. And you know what you're getting, you know what he wants, you know what he demands of the players. The players understand their roles, the players understand what they need to do. Sir Alex Ferguson, the 4-4-2 obviously wasn't like a crazy thing back then. Everyone played 4-4-2. But he wanted something specific from every single player. He knew the players knew what they needed to do.
He knew how to win. He was the best winner of all time.
Obviously not to win. And with very, very poor squads at times. The players understand what they need to do. It's not just take the ball and see what you can make happen. It's not individual, and that's the problem. And obviously, when you have quality individuals, it's going to help you a lot. And you can see it with a team like City with the quality they have. Guardiola can actually apply what he wants and the way he wants to play, because he has the quality that can complement that. And with United, obviously, the quality is very clear in the squad. There's a lot of quality players. There's a lot of world-class players, I'd say. But the problem is there is no... it's not even chemistry. There is no team plan. It's very individual. Even the pressing is individual. The defensive shape is individual. And you can definitely see it in all the five goals we can see against Liverpool. Every goal, there is some error in communication, error in understanding where I'm supposed to be, error in the defensive line. The defensive line goes up and someone stays back. There's no communication, like in the second goal, Maguire and Shaw, it should be clear, okay, I'm going for it, and I'm not going for it. They both go for it, and then we concede. These are mistakes that should not be happening. And it reminds me a lot, obviously, of the Spurs game last season, the 6-1. But the Spurs game last season, we were a man down. And before we were a man down, we were already down 2-1. And 3-1 very shortly after that card. And I feel like it wasn't
an excuse. You started off that game well, too. You scored first.
Yeah, we scored first. I scored in the first couple of minutes. And I feel like that wasn't an excuse, but at least it was an explanation. There was a reasoning behind why the team was so deflated, why there was such a... there was a lack of a challenge, really, for the other team. And with Liverpool, I mean, we started well as well again. With the Bruno chance, I feel like it should have been converted, but it happens. And then a couple minutes later, they go up. Maguire goes to cover Firmino, and then Shaw doesn't step up. So now Salah and Keita are 2-on-1, and it has to be a goal from there. Again, it comes down to individual errors. It maybe comes down to just defensive shape and something that's being worked on in training. The manager needs to be seeing that, because this is not the first time that happens, and he obviously has to get some of the blame, and maybe a lot of the blame, because if he is putting work in, he's studying, he's seeing what's happening, he can see the recurring mistakes that's been happening with United for the last 2-3 years since he came, really, or maybe since Sir Alex Ferguson left, I'd say. There are problems with confidence, obviously. And it's just, you can definitely tell that there is no game plan. It's just individual. It's just Rashford maybe taking a man on, Greenwood maybe cutting in and taking a shot. Ronaldo trying to make something, trying to make himself available. Bruno just pressing relentlessly for the whole 90 minutes. But there is no team press. It's just individual presses. It's just someone goes to press, but then the defender has three options to pass to. And because no one else is pressing and there's no plan on, okay, we're supposed to go there and we're supposed to block this pass option. And we're supposed to force him to go on this side. It's just not there. It's just the players wanna do something. They wanna work hard for the team, but they work hard individually, and that's not never really or most probably not gonna get you any results.
See, so, the thing is, like about you guys, like, and I probably told you this before many times, and I still firm believer of this. I do think if you're not the best squad in the league, you have the second best squad.
Yes, I mean, I would probably agree squad-wise, yeah.
I think, like, squad to squad, names to names, you have, like, if not the best squad, you have the best squad in the league. The issue is, like, you know, I faced that same issue with Lampard, right? Some managers out there, even some companies out there, get something of what they call a starter manager, right? He's good at starting up companies, but then after that company has started up and established itself, the board of directors decide to let him go, not because of being harsh, but that's his job, being a startup. Like, looking back on it now, Lampard wasn't really a bad, like, horrible coach, right? Looking back on it now, Ole did a lot of things that were good, like, especially post-Mourinho era. Like, United were a laughingstock. They were so horrible. And a lot of players were fighting with each other. There was a lot of fallouts in the dressing room. When Ole came in, he patched all that up. Okay? And I feel like also combined that with how brilliant Bruno Fernandes came out to be. Lenta, when you signed him, we all knew, we saw him in the Champions League. We thought, yeah, he's good. None of us thought he was that good. Right? Now, عارف لما لعيب يبقى so brilliant ثم اسمه في عيشه. And that's what I feel like what's happening this season. تقسمت الديوتيز بتاعته لناس تانية. You gave some of it to Pogba. You signed Sancho. You signed Varane. You signed Ronaldo. You've put yourself in a situation where you think, oh shit, we have to compete now. I think what a lot of United fans fell into trap of was thinking that they're not good enough. Like, especially when Ole took over, is like, yeah, we're not there yet. We have a good squad. But Anna, from day one, boy, like, you have one of the, when Lukaku was there, Kamen, when Sanchez was there, I was telling you, bro, you have one of the best squads in the league. Finishing fifth.
The problem has never really been the
names, exactly.
The problem has always been getting the best out of the squad and having.
Exactly. Yes.
And
which Ole did for a bit.
He goes on runs when we play really well, perform really well, and you can tell that this is not a team that you want to face. And the quality really shows with the squad. He's done it when he first came in. He's done it at the end of the COVID season. United were unplayable pretty much at these periods. Obviously, the PSG win was big. But at the same time, that's not enough. Ultimately, that's just not enough. Because for a team like United, if you want to be competing, and that's obviously the goal, especially when you have such quality and you're spending the money that you're spending on players, and he's getting the financial backing of the board, which has not been the case for all managers that came after Sir Alex Ferguson. So he had enough time, he had enough backing, he has the quality in the squad to be able to compete, and at least to be able to, I need to understand that he has an idea, he has something, a philosophy, as Ben Khal would say, something of this is how we're going to play, and this is how I want us to play, and this is what we're working towards. At least it works games, and some games it doesn't work. That's fine. But the problem is there is none of that. It's just very, very dependent on someone coming up with a moment of brilliance, and we go from there. And that's not something I like, especially in this day and age. Before then, the 2004-2005, Mourinho's defensive system was very effective. It was very dominant, and it worked for a reason, because there was no way to counter it. And then 2009-2010, that came Guardiola, and came Klopp after, and that then came the really high press, the kind of insane like counter pressing and everything, and from there on, the only way to counter that is to play that same way. To be able to compete with these kind of teams, you have to be confident on the ball. You can't just be defensive and park the bus and hope for the best. You can't just absorb pressure and try to play on counters, because nine times out of 10, that's not going to work. For a team like United, with the quality we have, we should be capable of keeping the ball, building up, being comfortable on the ball, not panicking whenever there is any press on us. And obviously the individuals in these positions are not comfortable enough on the ball. Talk about Fred, McTominay, Lindelof, the guys that start the build-up. They're not any. I wouldn't say that I would trust them with the ball, especially with press, with them being pressed. And that's obviously a problem that needs to be addressed, regardless of the manager and regardless of anything. But at the same time, these are not bad players. These are good players, and they play well if they're being deployed properly in the positions that they have to be deployed in. And to patch that up, Ole usually plays both of them together as kind of, he's half a CDM, he's half a CDM. So if they play together, they provide some defensive cover. And this just doesn't exist, because Fred is not a CDM, McTominay is not a CDM, and they don't understand the spaces they're supposed to cover. They don't understand the passes they're supposed to stop. The positioning is lacking. Yes, they play with a lot of heart. They provide a lot of energy and work rate. But it's just doesn't work. It's unbalanced. You can't just skip the midfield in the build-up and hope that Bruno is going to come up with something, or Bruno is going to make an insane pass to Rashford, or Rashford is going to make an insane run, and we're gonna cross the ball to Ronaldo, and he's going to get a header at some point, because it has to be more developed than that. It has to be more advanced than that. It can't just be this simple. In today's game, it can't be like that. In order to compete, it has to be more complex. Yes, the basics are important, but it can't just be, let's just defend as a unit and just hope with a couple of passes, we can give it to someone who knows what they're doing, and then they'll figure something out. That just doesn't work. Even if you have the quality that we have, that's only going to take you so far. And it's not going to get you to compete with the upper teams.
And you saw that, like, in life flesh form against Liverpool, Yanni. Normally, any team in the world, any team in the Premier League, especially when they defend as a unit. They're all standing up in the same line. What I saw against Liverpool was someone was trying to cover the offside, and the other is literally playing offside trap. Goal.
If you rewatch all five goals, there were.
They're the same exact mistake. Because
the problem is Liverpool are good enough to be able to score against us without us making mistakes. And I can stomach that. I can understand that they're in very good form. They're flying high. They have the best player in the world currently, and they can play good enough to be able to carve us open and score against us. But the problem is that we didn't even give them a challenge. They were not even subtle mistakes. They were huge mistakes, very, very obvious mistakes that are not supposed to happen on this level, not just in Man United. Like, they're not supposed to happen for a professional football player. And they're not supposed to happen this often. 5 goals in one game, and they're pretty much all scored by the same idea, the same mistake.
نفس الناحية.
Yeah, and it just can't happen. يعني it needs, يعني at least if the manager's job is to realize that this has happened, and this is not the first time this happens. This happened multiple times.
We've been here before, multiple times.
I'm talking about these exact mistakes with covering, with the fullbacks getting too narrow, with players pushing up to play offside trap, and then someone staying back, whether that's Shaw or Bissaka or Lindelof or whoever it is. There needs to be a realization that, okay, this is a huge problem that we need to address, and the players need to see, to watch videos of what's happening and the mistakes that are happening, so they can stop, or they can at least be an improvement in the rate that they happen. Because I can understand if it's like the last 5 minutes of the game and the players are tired and something like that. But so that was the first 5 minutes of the game. There is no excuse. You're playing against Liverpool. That should be enough incentive. That should be enough motivation. You're not lacking in energy. What else do you need to be able to focus on even the basics of defending? We created chances as well. Like, it's not like, because their midfield was not as strong as it usually is.
He almost scored in the first minute.
Yeah, in the first minute, and we almost scored a few times after. But if we defended at least semi decently, I think we would have set a chance to at least make a challenge out of it, not even win or draw. Maybe make it a bit more challenging, and they didn't need to even be better than just decent to put 5 past us. Like, they weren't even, like, no one looks at this game and thinks, oh, Liverpool played great. The United didn't stand a chance. United just stabbed themselves in the foot. They didn't offer anything.
They had 7 shots the whole game, 5 goals.
Yeah, it was too easy for them. That is my biggest problem with how it went.
You didn't give them a tough game. You didn't even come.
Because realistically, I think it was obvious that United were escaping with grinding results, escaping really bad performances with some kind of results. And Liverpool have been really good form. And Salah has obviously been in insane form recently since the start of the season. So there was all there. They were the favorites. Realistically, they were the favorites. And I think deep down, I realized that a lot of even United fans realized that Liverpool were the favorites, even at Old Trafford, with the form they're coming in. But we were hoping, or I was hoping personally, that maybe the home crowd, the home advantage, the big game, can kind of.
If anything, it got to United's head, not to Liverpool's.
I guess so, but like, I was just hoping, I was hopefully predicting a draw before the game. Honestly, I realized that a draw would be a good result at this point, and I just was just looking for a good performance. Just looking for something to be like, okay, maybe we didn't get the result we wanted, but at least we showed progress. We showed improvement from how we've been playing for the last month or two.
Let me ask you this. And I know you did mention about it, but this is a big topic. Where to go from here? We know that the board is currently talking to Antonio Conte, and we know that they haven't made a decision on Ole yet. Where to go from here? Because Conte is a guy that's going to come and he's going to demand like 7 new signings.
I think from what I've heard, or the that the yani obviously there's a lot of news coming out. I don't know what's true and what's not, but they the board is scared that it's gonna be similar to the Mourinho experience. And they're worried that it's gonna be a bit more a short term replacement.
And honestly, rightfully so.
I'm worried about the same thing, to be honest. I wouldn't pick Conte to be the next manager. As I said before, I never really want to say this in and this out and Solskjaer in, Solskjaer out, because I'm just working with what we have at this
point. But it is apparent, though, now more than ever that Ole isn't the right man for the job, right?
No, that's good. And I've said it before. I feel like...
Yeah, we've been here before after the Leipzig game. Yeah.
There is a ceiling of expectations, there's a ceiling of where he can take the team. And he's done a lot of good things for the club in general. But at the same time, like you mentioned as well, he reached a level when someone else needs to take over. But the problem is, the managers that I wanted to be next after Solskjaer are all not available right now. And the managers that are available, I feel like...
It's too impossible to get them out of there, especially mid-season.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about like the Zidane, the Conte, the whoever else is going to be available or maybe even slightly available to move.
If after all of this, Maho, let's just try to be realistic about it. You can't get Ten Hag, right, out of the question. You can't get Pochettino out of the question. Who are the vacant managers? You have Conte, Zizou.
Conte, Zidane, and that's pretty much it.
Right. We said that, and honestly, rightfully so, Conte is a tyrant as a coach. Okay, and from what we know is that he only plays with like 13, 14 players. That's it. And you have like over 30 players at United that all deserve playing time. Okay. Zizou, from what we understand, is a bit iffy. Like he's in no rush to get back into management. So where to go from here? So you have three options now: Solskjaer, Conte, and Zidane. Where does United go from here? Because you don't lack signings. I don't think so, at least.
I mean, if it was up to me, with the options available, I would go for Zidane, if I can. I feel like out of the three, he's probably the better option. What I think is going to happen is that Solskjaer is going to stay until at least the end of the season.
What if you finish Europa League?
Yeah, we got knocked out of the group. I think if we got knocked out of the group stage, I think that will be enough for the board to kind of move on from Solskjaer. I don't know who's going to be available by then. I don't know who's going to be willing to take the job, because I know Zidane wants to the French national team. So Conte is kind of the only clear option, I guess.
How bad do you not want him? Like, is it a big deal breaker? Because the guy is a certified winner.
He would be on the bottom of my list, but he would still be over Solskjaer. So if it happens and they bring in Conte to replace Solskjaer, I think it would be a bit of an improvement. Because at this point, even though he's kind of...
At least in the beginning, you know, get the engine going.
Yeah, he's not someone who's gonna be there for a long time. He's not someone who's gonna build up a squad. He's not someone who's gonna build up anything, really. He's just gonna use what he has. Maybe he's gonna ask for a couple 30-year-olds to kind of come in and do the job he wants.
He has Cavani and Ronaldo.
I guess, yeah. But I mean, at this point, the club needs a lift in some way.
Yes, definitely.
So I guess if it's the only option, then we have to go for it.
I mean, this guy, when he gets fired with a flamethrower. And you've experienced that with Mourinho.
Yes.
Is that a chance you're willing to take? Because you know that bringing Conte in...
there was
no
one else available.
Yeah, you know that bringing Conte in would mean that there are some players that are going to have to be sold. Pile up by Van de Beek, على Lingard, على مش بعيد راشفورد ومارسيال, ومش بيلعبوا.
I mean, we'll see. Honestly, I have no idea what's gonna happen. I don't know. I don't wanna predict anything until I've seen official news. Really.
But is this a chance you're willing to take in order to win? Well, you'd rather build from the ground up.
I think I would rather get someone else. If I know that we can get someone else next season, beginning of next season, someone that I actually want, or someone that, I'm talking about me personally, and other people want other things, but if it's someone like Ten Hag or someone like Pochettino, I would be okay with waiting until next season, if that means we get one of these guys. Obviously, I really wanted Nagelsmann, so that ship has sailed already. So I guess Ten Hag or Pochettino or maybe even Luis Enrique, I would be glad to take him over Zidane or Conte. But if it's if I don't know for sure that we can do that, or if I'm not already in talks with any of these guys, or it doesn't look likely that it's gonna happen, then I guess Conte is the only solution.
It might be his. I mean, you've experienced that with Mourinho. But if... Because here's the thing. You don't want to risk dropping deeper with Solskjaer. Because let's say the worst comes to worst. And you finish outside of the top four. And I know that's far-fetched. Okay, and I get it. You have enough quality, beyond enough quality to finish top four. The gap between you and Leicester and Arsenal and Tottenham is pretty big. Okay, I'm fully aware of that. And Brighton will drop out eventually. So would you risk for worse to come to even worse and you finishing outside of top four for the sake of getting another coach in next season, or get a coach that can win now but risk the morale, the cohesion, the players, the dressing room?
I think I'd rather risk this season and get someone who's going to be there long term, who's going to build an actual team plan and have an identity to them, than go for right now.
Let's then,
say if
yeah,
we're gonna wait and then end up going for Conte next season, then I don't see the point.
There's no point. Just bring him now. But I don't think it's his style. I don't think he's ever taken over a club mid-season. And I think he's willing to make that exception for United. But the board didn't offer him anything. I think they're too scared. And like we've always been dealt with
Joel
Glazer.
Haven't made up their mind really.
Yeah,
about,
and I mean,
Solskjaer to start with.
Well, let's end it. We've talked a bit about Liverpool and how brilliant is Salah. When we first started the episode, we both said City is going to win the league.
Yeah.
And you predicted it, to be fair, in your preseason predictions. I think... Here's the thing. Chelsea are not playing well. Yes, they're getting the points up the board, but that might run out. City... is not showing any signs of stopping down or slowing or anything.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Chelsea haven't been playing as good as
They
they
could,
have been last
exactly.
season.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they've been okay and they've got the results. So I feel like this is, if even if this is kind of a slump, it's good that it's happening now, not in the major parts of the season, on the knockout stages in the Champions League, or not in the Christmas period, or because these kind of games decide seasons. And if it's happening now and they can get it over with and they can come back stronger, obviously now with Lukaku and Werner out, I don't know the extent of the injuries, but I've heard it's going to be a few weeks at least. They're gonna need to find another way of scoring, I guess. And I know last season Lukaku wasn't there, and Werner at some point wasn't playing as much, and it was more on Havertz and Hudson-Odoi and Mount and these guys. And maybe that can help the team. Actually, maybe they can kind of go back to how they were playing last season, to the old habits of not having to depend on Lukaku, not having that big man, that target man that they kind of play off.
They can't unlock Lukaku yet for some reason. They looked better in the games Lukaku didn't play.
Yeah, the very promising start. But I said, and I think quite a few people said that at the time, is he's not consistent enough. And he's going to have periods when he just doesn't score, and he's going to be very frustrating. He's going to be very low on confidence, and he's going to show. And I think he actually hasn't been playing too badly before his injury. But it just wasn't even close to what was expected of him after that Arsenal game. So yeah, I mean, I've seen it with Lukaku before. So yeah, I've seen it right in front of my eyes. He can have games where he looks like he's unplayable, and he can have games where he looks like he has never played football before. Depends on who you get, really.
If Chelsea finds their form back, is City still gonna win the league?
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to admit it, but City is too good. That Brighton game, they were immaculate. They were so good.
And Brighton weren't even bad.
No, Brighton played well, yeah.
They played quite well, but just City are just tough. They're just really tough to face. They can punish you so easily with the amount of quality they have. And the amount of quality they have coming off the bench as well. Like, De Bruyne wasn't even starting. Sterling wasn't starting. Ferran Torres is out for a while. And these are all players that can easily get into other top teams. And they can't even play consistently with City. But it's just the depth and the quality in the squad is, for me, is enough for them to win the league this season.
I totally agree. Yeah, here's the thing. If you're a neutral, you're in for a really great title race. Three teams would do anything to get that league title. If they're not at their peak form, they're getting close to it. So it's about to be a really good title race. So let's end the podcast with the last section that I wanted to talk to you about. And I feel like it's going a bit under the radar for some reason. A lot of people are not noticing. But what's going on at Leeds?
I guess it's they've been quite unlucky with the injuries, because they already have quite a thin squad. And they've had a few important injuries. Right now, I think they have Bamford out. They have Robin Koch out. They have Calvin Phillips out. They have Rafinha got subbed off quite quite early last game. Firpo's out. Ayling is out. So they have a very, very long list of injuries, and they don't have a lot of senior players to start with, and they're depending a lot on very young players. And even then, they're playing out of position. Having Stroik has having to play as a midfielder, Shackleton having to play as a right back. I guess.
But they're Rodrigo. They're not even good. They're very underwhelming. It's talk about Yanni says that second season syndrome. I've ever seen one.
They have been underwhelming, and again the injuries haven't done them any favors, because it's very difficult to try to pick up or kind of rediscover your form when you're already down, when you have a lot of your key players out injured. It's kind of a difficult situation to be in for them and for Bielsa. And obviously with the really impressive season they had last season, expectations were higher. And they already had this season when they kind of adapted to the Premier League. And from how they played last season, they probably should have gotten a better finish. But people were putting it down to that. It's still their first season back after 20-odd years or something. Give it time, and I think they'll get better. But when the expectations get higher and you lose the element of surprise, and you lose a lot of your key players, it becomes very difficult to live up to the expectations. And they've definitely been a victim of that this season. They've had games when they've played really badly, and they either lost or drew. And they've had games where they played quite well and they either lost or drew. So it just seems like they're not getting...
The only game they won was Watford, wasn't it? It was 1-0.
I think they only won one game, yeah. They got a fair few draws, I think.
They're on 7 points. Yeah, so they got 4 draws.
Yeah.
So 5 losses. Yeah.
But I mean, promising for them, Gilhart, I think his name is. He came on last game. It looked really good.
Yes, he did.
Yes. He got them the penalty in the last minute, and he almost scored, I think, 2 or 3 times. He looks like a really good player. So maybe I think they just need a couple of wins, and they might start to.
They do play They do play Norwich next.
And that's kind of the perfect opportunity.
Yeah, to gain confidence, yeah.
Because if there is anyone who's worse than them right now, it's Norwich.
Yeah, yeah. I think Newcastle are worse than them. Newcastle and Burnley, for sure.
Burnley have actually been surprisingly...
They're not bad. Yeah, but... You rely on your left back to score. This is like the...
He doesn't actually play at left back. No.
Yeah, they play like high pressure for some... This looks so different. Like, the damn it is, Sean Dyche.
Sean Dyche is kind of... I'm just gonna put it... I'm just gonna attack.
No Premier League, like just vibes.
And maybe that... them in the championship, but at least you know the reputation they have is not very nice.
Why change now? Yeah, it's been like 6 years. بتلعب
إجوان. Maybe it feels like the squad is kind of ready now. Maybe it feels like with Cornet that they have better athleticism or like better quality for pressing high and playing more attacking. I don't know. I'm not sure what's happening, but they've actually been pressing. They've been quite poor from set pieces, or not poor from set pieces, but they haven't been dependent on set pieces as much as they used to.
I would argue, Newcastle is worse than Leeds, for sure.
Probably, yeah. But Saint-Maximin is also, he can win games by himself. So.
Yeah, and so is Rafinha, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, if he's fit.
اللي مشبرقنا في الفانتسي. طب last words. I know this was a bit of a meaty episode.
Hopefully next week can be better for United, because it doesn't get any easier. So hopefully by the next month or within the next month, there will be something to cheer about, because it's getting quite depressing.
I hate to break it to you, lad, but in the next month, you don't have an easy fixture.
I know. I fully realize that.
But here's the thing. Okay, we've seen this so far many times. Okay, so it's Tottenham next up. They're not good. They're like, but I neither, think they're the worst top seven side.
We have
Tottenham, City,
Atalanta, midweek.
Okay, Watford. City. Those are 3 points.
No, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, so you don't know until you know, and I don't, like, we've been here before. I don't think it's as bad, you know, as bad of a stretch. I think. Ole, if anything, he's shown us before that when there is that tough run of fixture, he normally actually puts some points on the board, so you never know. If he stays...
After Watford, we have Chelsea.
Chelsea, and then Arsenal, yeah. Then we have three
London. Real and Atalanta in between, and they are just kind of deciding games for a Champions League campaign. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be until... December 2nd. So from now till December 2nd, it's gonna be
a tough, tough stretch
for our season. So,
but one thing also I want to say, which is also maybe a silver lining, you have a really deep squad, and November is normally the month where. عارف اللي يقول لك يكرم المرء او يهان يعني نوفمبر ومارش اكتر 2 months are so filled with fixtures that only the best of the best make it out okay.
We have good depth, but only in specific areas. We don't have good enough depth defensively, especially fullbacks, and we don't have
center backs.
Yeah, well, center backs, I mean, we have depth, we don't have quality depth. And CDM, we still don't even have a proper CDM other than Matic, who is not really capable of playing 60 minutes.
I don't know how he still runs.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll see.
I mean, to be honest, in his youth, he didn't run either, okay? He used to play for Chelsea, I know. To be fair, yeah. Okay, well, Martin, I want to thank you so much, man, for coming on and... thank you for being back.
Me. I'm sorry about the late episode. It was completely my fault.
It's okay. No. Totally okay. We'll try to get another episode soon out enough. We still didn't talk about the Newcastle turnover, and we still didn't talk about how brilliant Brentford is. So we'll leave these two topics to the next episode. Tomorrow is the EFL Cup games. Not going to lie to you. I'm probably going to sleep. I don't want to watch these games.
I mean, I haven't been able to watch a lot of football recently, so I feel like any kind of game I'll take at this time.
Nah, I'm good, man. Like, had it been up to me, I would have probably happily been locked out. I do not like this tournament. I think it's the most useless tournament out there. But we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye-bye.